So today's daf is Yud Tes Amud Aleph, and we'll begin on the bottom, the last two lines, on Yud Ches Amud Beis, Tana Rabbanan. The Braisa records a machlokes between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel about the mitzvah of Tashbisu. The Torah tells us that we have to get rid of our chametz. And what does that mean, to get rid of your chametz? Beit Shammai Omrim, Lo Yimkar Adam Chemtzo L'Nachri. It's not enough that he sells his chametz to a guy. Ellen Cain, Yodeh Bo, Sheyechale Kodem HaPesach. He has to know for sure that the guy that buys his chametz will completely consume the chametz before Pesach, because according to Beit Shammai, the mitzvah bir chametz is to destroy it from the world. Beis Hillel omrim, no. Kol zman shemutu li ochlo, mutu gam lemochro. As long as you're allowed to eat the chametz on Erev Pesach, you're allowed to sell it. The mitzvah tashbisu doesn't require that the chametz be absolutely destroyed, but rather that the chametz be out of the reshus of the Yisrael. And if he sells it to a guy, that's perfectly acceptable. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and now we're going to start the daf for today. That's Yud Tes Amud Aleph. Kutach HaBavli. This was a kind of a dip that was very popular in Bavel, and it was prepared with like yogurt, and but different pieces of bread was mixed inside. V'chol mini kutach, and any other types of these yogurts, these dips that have chametz in it, also lemochro shloshim yom kodem haPesach. Already 30 days before Pesach, these are things that are consumed over the course of time. They're not consumed within a short period of time, because they're dips, and therefore it may be as long as 30 days until it gets consumed. And Rabbi Yehuda reflects the shita of Beit Shammai, that in order to be mekayim the mitzvah tashbisu, it's not enough to get your chametz out of your reshus, but rather you have to make sure and guarantee that it's consumed before Pesach. And in the case of Kutach HaBavli, or Kol Minei Kutach, we will not guarantee that this will be consumed unless it's sold as early as 30 days before Pesach. The Sfasema says that the Chiddush here is that even in the case of Taroves Chametz, where the Chametz is mixed in with other substances, even so, Beit Shammai, and here Rabbi Yehuda standing on the shoulders of Beit Shammai, would have to guarantee that it be consumed before Pesach. Certainly other foods should be sold in a way that you can guarantee that they'll be consumed before Pesach, according to Beit Shammai. Now, in other foods, could be that you can guarantee it'll be consumed in a shorter period of time. But in the case of Kutach HaBavli, it takes a full 30 days until you could assume that it would be consumed before the Chag. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a brisa, nosnim mizonos lifnei akelev bechatzer. You're allowed to feed your dog of food on Shabbos. And we're going now back to Shabbos. Nitolo viyotso ein is kokinlo. And if the kelev takes the food and he goes lachutz, you don't have to prevent him from doing so. And the dog could carry it on his own. In other words, normally you don't send an animal to do work for you because of what's called menuchas behema. You have to have your animal work, the pasuk rest, and the pasuk requires that. But here, the animal decided to carry the food on his own. Kayotzim are very similar. Nosnim mizonos lifnei anochri b'chotzer. You're allowed to give food to a guy in a chotzer. And Nitolo, if the Nachri makes the decision that he wants to take this food, the Yotza, and he wants to go out of the Chotzer and carry it through Rosh Hashanah Rabim, ain't this Kokimlo. We don't have to worry about it. And here there's a very important Tosfos on the top of the Omud, Divrei HaMashchil Nosnin. He says that even though Beit Shammai holds, and this is something that we learned yesterday on Daf Yud Ches, that you're not allowed to sell something to a guy or lend something to a guy Erev Shabbos, unless there's enough time that the guy will get home He'll arrive at his house on Shabbos, because otherwise it looks like you're commissioning the guy to carry something for you on Shabbos. But their moda here, in this case of Mizonos, that if the Nachri is standing in this courtyard, and he decides to take on his own, the Nachri has made his own decision. He was not commissioned to take the food out into Rishus HaRabim. But in other cases where you sell it to a guy and you know that he's going to carry it in Rishus HaRabim, then Beit Shammai require that you guarantee that he'll reach his home before Shabbos. The Gemara says, Asu Lamali, why did this price have to repeat itself? It already told the Chiddush in the case of a Kelev, and now he has to repeat it. Hainu Hach, it's the same thing in the case of a guy, it's just a repetition. Mal de Tema, we would have thought, hi, in the case of a Kelev, Rami Ale, your responsibility as the owner of the dog is called Mizonoseyam Aleim. You're responsible to feed the dog. And therefore, in the light of that responsibility, of that chiyuv, the Rabbanu were more lenient, and they allowed you to feed the dog, even though the dog might go and carry the food through Rishus HaRabim. But high in the case of a goy, lo rami alei, you don't have a responsibility to feed him. Kamash malon, nevertheless, even though you have no responsibility to feed him, it's not mizono shel nachri alecha, it's not mutal, it's not a responsibility on the Jew. Nevertheless, we're allowing him, the Yisrael, to feed the goy before Shabbos, even if the goy is going to carry it from the chatzer through a Rishus HaRabim. Some of the poskim say that the reason why they allowed this is because of what's called Darkei Shalom, that we do have a responsibility to feed the non-Jewish people because of the peace and the harmony between Jews and non-Jews. Torah Rabbanon, we learned in a Braisa, and now we're talking about Shvisas Kelim, which means that according to Beit Shammai, you're not allowed to have your Kelim, your utensils work for you on Shabbos. And therefore, lo yaskir adam kelov lenachri be'erev Shabbos. If on Erev Shabbos you rent out your kelim, and you're going to get paid for that use on the part of the recipient, the guy, then you are basically related, you are now connected to the malacha that the guy is doing on your kelim. What is mitzarif his malacha on the kelim to you? Not only the fact that you own the kelim, but moreover the fact that the guy is paying you a rental fee to use your kelim. So it's as if you gave it to him on Erev Shabbos for the purpose of working with these kelim on Shabbos. Avol, the Gemara says, the Brice says, b'yom revi, b'yom chamishi mutar. In the case of a Friday rental means you know that he's going to work with your kelim on Shabbos. There's no question about it. You're renting to him on Friday. But if you rent it to him early in the week, on a Wednesday or a Thursday, then even though the guy actually uses your kelim on Shabbos, but it's not explicit that you gave it to him for the purpose of working your kelim on Shabbos. In your mind, it's very possible that it'll work with the kelim on a Wednesday, on a Thursday, on a Friday, but not necessarily on Shabbos. So that far, we don't have to go to prohibit what's called shvisas kelim. Kayotzebes, similarly, ein mishalchin igros biad nochri bi'erev Shabbos. You know, this touches on the issue of mailing letters on Erev Shabbos. Again, according to Beit Shammai, what's going to happen here is that the guy, the postman, is going to carry your mail on Shabbos, because you gave it to him on Erev Shabbos to mail. Aval, but b'reviyah b'chamishi mutar. If you gave it to him to mail, to carry the post on a Wednesday or a Thursday, that's okay, because then it doesn't, it's not obvious that the guy is going to carry this mail on your behalf on Shabbos. Maybe he'll bring it before Shabbos. So we give you up until Friday, but on Friday, you're not allowed to mail the letter with a guy on Friday, because you know fully well that you're giving it to him for the purpose of his carrying it on Shabbos. Now the Gemara talks about the tzidkus, the super piety of Rabbi Yossi HaKohen. They said about Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, Omer Lov V'Amrile, others say there was another Rabbi Yossi who was called Rabbi Yossi HaChosid, Shlo Nimtzok Sav Yado B'Ad Nochri Miolam. He never gave a document with his signature on it to a guy, because there's always the possibility that the guy would carry the document on Shabbos, and his signature, it's obvious to everyone that it's his document, and it would appear as if the guy was carrying it on his behalf. Tana Rabbanan, more about mailing letters with a goyish postman before Shabbos. Ein mishalchin igeres biyad nochri b'erev Shabbos. We don't allow sending a letter in the hands of a goy on erev Shabbos on Friday. Elen kein kotzeitz lo domin. Oh, this is very fascinating. The Gemara is now making a very sharp turn at a crossroads and saying that if the mishalech who sent this letter with a goy hires him, and the guy is now working in order to make a salary, then you're allowed to send the letter with the guy even on Erev Shabbos. Why? Because the halacha differentiates between two situations. One is where the guy is doing you a favor, he's not getting paid for it, and we assume he's doing it on your behalf, and that's like you commissioned him to violate the Shabbos on your behalf, as opposed to a situation where the guy is being paid. And then the halacha makes that subtle distinction and says, well, the guy is not doing it on your behalf, he's doing it on his own behalf in order to make a salary. And now the Gemara quotes a brisa that records machlokas tanoim on this very din. Beit Shammai omrim. Beit Shammai hold that you're not allowed to send a letter with a guy on erev Shabbos unless there's enough time before Shabbos kidei sheyagia lebeso, that the guy could arrive in his house before Shabbos. Now, who's the beso over here? So I said to you that the beso is the bias of the guy. However, Rashi seems to indicate, no, that the beso here is the house of the recipient of this letter. So there are three people here. There's Reuven, there's John Paul, and there's Shimon. Reuven is sending a letter with John Paul to his friend Shimon. And there's enough time before Shabbos for John Paul to deliver the letter to Shimon. Whether he does so or he doesn't so is irrelevant. Under those circumstances, you're allowed to send the letter. Beisil Omrim, Kedeshi Agia, Levayis Hasomach Lechoma. It doesn't have to have enough time for the letter to be delivered into the hands of Shimon. It's sufficient if there's enough time before Shabbos for this guy, this John Paul, to bring the letter to the outskirts of the city. The Gemara thinks that this brisa applies even in a case where the Israel hired the guy and made a contractual agreement to pay him to deliver this letter. So the Gemara asks, "Valo katzatz." Katzatz means the guy has a salary; he's getting paid a salary. There was an agreement that he would be paid for his work, and we said in that case, he's not doing the work on behalf of the Jew; he's doing it for himself, for his own selfish purposes to make the money. Omrav sheish es hachi kamar. This is what the brisa means. If katzatz, if they set up a salary, then you're allowed to send the letter with a guy even on erev Shabbos. And that's fine. But in low katzatz, in a case where the guy is doing it and you just asked him for a favor, so to speak, Beit Shammai omrim, Beit Shammai say, ad sheyagila beso, there has to be enough time before Shabbos to deliver the letter to the recipient. Beisil omrim, ad sheyagia lebayis hasomach lechoma, he has to reach the city. So that, according to Rav Sheshes, this price has to be interpreted as referring to a case of low katzatz, but if it was katzatz, if they set up a salary, then it's mutter, and we assume the guy is working on his own behalf. So the Gemara asks Akasha, how can you tell me that the Sefer this brisa is talking about a situation where a person sends a letter biad nachri b'erev Shabbos, and Vomat Reisha, the Reisha says, Ein Mishalchin. The beginning of this brisa says clearly, explicitly, that you don't send a letter with a guy unless you are kotzeitz damin. Lo kasha. And now the Gemara reconciles the apparent contradiction between the Reisha of this brisa and the Sefer. Every part of this brisa is referring to a different scenario, a different case. Huh. The Sefer of the brisa, which allows you to send a letter with a guy on Erev Shabbos. And that seems to imply that in general you could send the letter, even in a case of low katzatz. That's a case of the Kviya Bei Davar B'Masa. Now, Masa means the city, And Davor is the Shalit. He's the person in charge of the city. And we're sending the letter to him, to the Poritz, you know, the Goyisha leader of the controller of the city. And then he, that person, lives b'kvius in that city. And therefore we have no doubt that the Goyisha postman is going to know where to find the address to deliver the letter, because the Davor is Kovale B'masa. He's always there in the city. Basically, just to summarize the Brisa is saying the following, that the Reisha of the Brisa, which prohibits sending this letter if there was no contractual salary, that's the Lokvia Beit Davor B'masa. In other words, he doesn't know exactly where to deliver it. There's a question as to what address to deliver it. And the other part of the Brisa, which says you're allowed to send this letter even if you're not paying the salary, that's a case where the recipient of that letter is Dar Biosa Ir B'kvius. He lives there on a permanent basis, and everybody knows clearly exactly, and the guy who's delivering the letter will know exactly where to deliver the letter, so we don't have to worry that he's going to run around on Erev Shabbos and look for the letter. Yeah, look for the recipient of the letter. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, now we want to know about taking a ship on Erev Shabbos. Are you allowed to embark on a journey over the ocean? You know, take a cruise. And the Brisa says, Ein mafligim b'sfina pachos mishloshi yomim kodem Shabbos. In other words, from Wednesday and on, you're not allowed to embark on a ship. Why? By medvar mamurim lidvar reshus, because he can postpone his trip. It's not urgent. He's not going for a mitzvah. But lidvar mitzvah shaper, though, for the sake of a mitzvah, he's allowed to embark on the ship even on erev Shabbos. However, there's one condition: uposek imo almanas lishbos. He's got to make an agreement and a condition with the non-Jew who's he's the captain of the ship, that when it gets to Shabbos, he will stop the ship, and they won't move on Shabbos. However, the Eino Shoves, even if at the end of the day the captain of the ship decides that he's going to travel on Shabbos no matter what, then it's okay. As long as you try to convince the captain of the ship and you officially made that agreement, that's okay. Direi Rebbe, according to Rebbe, Rebbe Shimon Gamliel Omer, Eino Tzarech. The Yisrael doesn't have to make such a condition with the Goyisha captain. He's allowed to go because he's going to a Dvar Mitzvah. Umin Tzur, Litzaydon, Sidon, if he leaves on a Friday from a city called Tzur to a city called Sidon, Afilu Berev Shabbos Mutter, because we assume that he can reach there before Shabbos. So what's the whole Iser here of leaving on a boat before Shabbos? What's the nature and the reason for this Iser? There are a number of different answers to this question. According to one opinion, we're afraid of seasickness, and that will undermine his Oneg Shabbos. But if he leaves 3 days in advance, he'll already get used to the ship, and he won't suffer from seasickness. Others say that in any case of a ship, there's a certain amount of chil Shabbos that's done by the captain of the ship and his crew, and therefore, if he leaves right before Shabbos, he knows that they're going to violate the Shabbos. Torah Rabbanu, we learned in a Braisa, Ein Tzarin. We don't, in a military campaign, we don't put a siege around the city, Halayor Shal Nachrim, non-Jewish cities, Pachos Mishloshi Yomim Kodim L'Shabbos. You have to start that military, wage that war 3 days before Shabbos, because again, there's going to be a lot of Chil Shabbos involved if you're out at battle. And if you start the siege 3 days before Shabbos, that's already disconnected from Shabbos, v'yim hischilu. But if they already embarked upon this siege and the military campaign is already up and running, ein mafsikin, you don't have to stop the campaign when it gets to Shabbos. You continue, even if it means violating the Shabbos. That's the nature of the mitzvah milchama. V'chein ha'yashamai omer, and Shammai used to say,
based on a pasuk in Dvarim Chaf Ad Rinita. The pasuk says, "Osa imcha milchama ad Rinita afilu b'Shabbos." You're allowed to continue the war and the siege against the city, even in on Shabbos itself, in order to win the war and subjugate the people. Omar Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, Nogim Hoyu Beis Abba. If you remember that Rav Shimon Gamliel said that his minhag, based on his father and Gamliel, was that they would not give a piece of laundry to the laundryman unless it was 3 days before Shabbos. Tanya, we learned in the Brayso, Rav Tzadik, Kachoyim in Hogo Shel, Beis Rav Gamliel. This was the minhag in Rav Gamliel's house. Shall you know Slim Kli Lavan Lakoves, Shlosha Yomim Kodim L'Shabbos. In other words, the amount of work that is a very long piece of work. He had to launder a white piece of clothing, and it would take at least 3 days until it was completely laundered, and we want to make sure that the guy is not doing a malach on behalf of the Jew on Shabbos itself. But tzvuim, if they're colored garments, afilu b'erev Shabbos, even on erev Shabbos it's okay, because then we assume that he could complete the laundering of the colored garment within a short amount of time, and therefore you're allowed to give it to him on erev Shabbos. Midvayim lamadu, we learn from this a principle in terms of laundering. She halavanim kashim lechabson yosim and atzvuim. It takes a longer time to launder white clothing than it does colored clothing. And the Gemara sort of embellishes this with a story about Abaye. Abaye haviyoyev lehahu mana letzviya. He paid a certain amount of money to a launderer for a colored garment. Lekatzra means a koves, meaning a launderer. Amalei Abaye said to the koves, Kama boy siluya, how much money do you want me to pay you for this? In other words, are you going to charge me a different price, a lower price in the case of a colored garment? Amalei, and this launderer said to Abaye, Kirichivara, I'm going to charge you for this colored garment the same price that I would charge you for a white garment. In other words, he jacked up the price on him. Amalei, Abaye says, think far kadmuch rabbanon. The rabbanon already knew before you and taught us that to clean launder a white garment is a lot more challenging than to launder a colored garment. And therefore, you don't have any rights to charge me for a colored garment what you would charge for a white garment. Amar Abaye, hai man deyoyev mana lekatzara, when a person gives a article of clothing to a launderer, then b'mishcha nesivle. Mishcha means that they should he should measure the size of the beged before he gives it to the launderer. And the reason for that is, and b'mishkal nishkal minei, and when he gets it back, he should also measure it to see if he can compare the size of the beged before and after. Ditfei, if he finds that when he gets back to beged, it's larger. Afsa de dematre, then this launderer caused him a loss because he stretched out the garment. He stretched it. V'ibetzir, and he gets back a small, a shrunken garment, is afsa de dekavtze. Then he caused him a loss because he shrunk the garment. Fine. Now we go back to our Mishnah. V'shoven eluv elishet ta'anim. What we're allowed to do is, if we started crushing the grapes and the olives in the Beis Chabad, we're allowed to, on Erev Shabbos, place beams so that the process of getting out the juices will continue on Shabbos. Maishna kulu de gozu Beit Shammai u'maishna koros Beis Chabad v'iguli agas de lo gozu. Why is it that Beit Shammai always consistently prohibit starting a malach that will continue on Erev Shabbos, that will continue on Shabbos? And here, in the case of putting the beams on top of the olives and the grapes, lo gazu, they allowed you to do it. So the Gemara answers, Hanach, in this case where he started the crushing, I'm sorry, Hanach means those. In those cases, the Malacha, where the Mishnah quotes Beit Shammai as being Machbir, that's the Ovid Leib Shabbos Mechayiv Chatos, that if he had started that Malacha on Shabbos, he would be Chayiv Chatos, he violates the Shabbos. Is Gazu Beit Shammai, be Erev Shabbos Mechashaycha, and therefore Beit Shammai says, don't start a Malacha on Erev Shabbos, which if you had performed that Malacha on Shabbos, you'd be Chayiv Chatos. But koros beis habar v'igulei agas. These cases where you put these heavy beams on top of the olives, the ovidle b'shabbos. Even if you had done that b'shabbos, meaning he started the crushing process on Friday, and he continued on Shabbos by placing heavy beams, lo machayev chatos, he would not be chayev chatos. That's not a violation of what we call schita, of extracting the juices, for which he be chayev chatos. It's therefore lo gozru. Therefore, Beit Shammai allowed you to do this on Erev Shabbos and put the beams on the olives. Man tana dechol midi yosim emela shaper dami. Which tana holds that in this case where the mashkim, the liquids, are coming out of the olives, it's not a violation of the Torah law. Shaper dami means kilu on a Torah basis. He's allowed to put the beams on top of it, and therefore Beit Shammai allow you to put the beams on Erev Shabbos. On Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. So this is the first opinion in the Gemara. Rabbi Yossi is Rabbi Shmuel. This reflects the sheet of Rabbi Shmuel Disnan, a mission in Edios, Hashum, Vaboser, Vamolilos. These are all types of unripened garlic and unripened grapes and unripened grains. These things are very sharp. They have a very sharp taste, and very often they would put it into a dip. And that's what they did. So on Erev Shabbos Rizkan, he started on Friday to crush these different kinds of grapes and grains and garlic, mibod yom. So he started before sunset. And in such a case, Rabbi Shmuel Omer Yigmar Mishetechshach. He's allowed after nighttime, after nightfall, to put the korah on top, because again, he started the process of riskon, risika. Riskon means they started crushing them on Friday, and now on Shabbos, according to Rabbi Shmuel, he's allowed to put the beams on top of the crushed grapes. Rabbi Akiva Omer, and here we turn to Daf Yutes Amid Beis, Lo Yigmar. He's not allowed to put the beams on top of the grapes. So from Rabbi Shmuel we see that in a case of schita, melecha schita, in the cases of shum and bosa and melilos that we mentioned, since the crushing took place on Erev Shabbos, he is not going to violate a melecha if he puts the beams on Shabbos. And therefore he's going to allow you l'chatchila to put the beams on Erev Shabbos. And that's what we saw in Beit Shammai in our Mishnah. So Rabbi Yossi says that the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Shmuel. Now, Beit Shammai in our Mishnah is built on the Shita of Rabbi Shmuel. That's what it comes out, according to Rabbi Yossi. Now, the Gemara offers another interpretation as to who is the Tana of our Mishnah who allows you to put these beams on Erev Shabbos, because if you had done it on Shabbos, you would not violate a Torah prohibition of Schita. Rabbi Eliezer, Omar, Rabbi Eliezer. So these are two different Rabbi Elazars. One Rabbi Elazar is Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas, he's an Amora, and then there's Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, he's a Tana. So Rabbi Elazar identifies the Tana of our Mishnah as Rabbi Elazar. Disnan, we learned in the Mishnah, this is at the end of Masechet Shabbos, it says, Chalos Dvash, these are honeycombs, Sherisk on the Erev Shabbos. On Erev Shabbos, he started crushing them to get out the Dvash. V'yotzu mi'atzmon, and the Dvash comes out of these honeycombs automatically on Shabbos. Asur, according to the Tanakhama of this Mishnah, you're not allowed to enjoy the benefits of that Dvash on Shabbos, because we're always afraid that you might come to do the Schita B'Yadayim on Shabbos. But Rabbi Elazar Matir, Rabbi Elazar says you're allowed to do this, so as long as the honeycombs were crushed on Erev Shabbos, we're not going to institute an act of Gzera that maybe he'll come to do the Schita B'Yadayim. And therefore he holds that even if the Schita process of getting the honey out of the combs will continue on Shabbos, that's not on Easter. Therefore you're ready on Erev Shabbos, you're allowed to set up this process before Shabbos. So we see clearly from Rabbi Elazar that anything that's going to, in the future, come out by itself, any juices and so forth, that's not considered schita as far as the Torah law is concerned. And now we understand Beit Shammai and our Mishnah, who are matir, putting the beans on top of the grapes and the olives on Erev Shabbos, even though the mashke, the liquids, are going to come out on Shabbos itself. But that's going to happen automatic, because even had he done it on Shabbos, since he did the crushing process and began it on Erev Shabbos, he would not be chayv achatos. So the Gemara wants to know, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, he said that the Mishnah reflects the Shita Rabbi Shmuel, my time, why didn't he lo amar Rabbi Elazar? So why couldn't he interpret that this Mishnah reflects the Shita of Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, which we saw in Rabbi Elazar? Amalacha, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina will tell you that he can't prove anything from Rabbi Elazar. And that would not, we have no proof that Rabbi Elazar would agree to our Mishnah. Why? Because Hassam, in the case of what we call Chalos Tvash, that means honeycombs, who, that's the case where Rabbi Elazar was lenient, and he permitted setting this process up on Erev Shabbos, even though it's going to continue on Shabbos. Why? Dimei kara ochel ulabasof ochel. The definition of schita is when you start with ochel, and you end up with a mashke, you end up with a liquid. But here, in the case of a honeycomb, from the beginning, it's called Meikara Ochel Ubasof Ochel Mitchila. Biyod Shadvash Betoch Achalos Unidon Kaochel. Even when the dvash is inside the honeycomb in its natural state, it's considered an ochel. And now when you take it out, it still maintains the shame ochel. And therefore, Rabbi Elazar holds that even if he would do a schita biyadayim, he would do it directly on Shabbos. That's not an Isur Torah, because the Isur Schita is only when you take a mashka out of an ochel. But here it started as an ochel and it ends as an ochel. But hocha in our Mishnah with regard to olives and grapes, meikara ochel v'hashta mashka. You know, the oil and the wine that's inside these grapes and olives, they are ochel before you take them out. When you take them out and they become a mashka, that exactly is the violation of the melacha of Schita. And therefore Rabbi Elazar would hold that even if you started the process of crushing them on Erev Shabbos, it would still be a violation of the Torah law of Schita if he did this on Shabbos. Because any mashke that he gets out by the process of putting these beams on would be a violation of Melechah Schita. We're not going to allow you to do on Erev Shabbos that which, if you did it on Shabbos, would be a Melechah Doraisa of Schita. Now the Gemara flips around the question. For Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas, why is it that Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas, why does he tell you that that our Mishnah is reflects the Shita of Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua? I mean, after all, Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina had just put forth a very, very good and cogent argument that Chalos Dvash is not related, it's not parallel to that Mishnah of Zaysim Vanovim. So the Gemara answers, Hashaminin le Rabbi Elazar, he says that Rabbi Elazar had a brisa. And in this brisa, he found out that Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua holds that afilu zeisim anonim nami shari, that even in the case of zeisim anovim, it's mutter, and you're allowed to set this up on Erev Shabbos where you put the beams on and zeisim anovim and the mashkim ayotzim and b'shabbos miatzmon, and the liquids will come out by themselves. Tahaki asa Rav Hoshaya Minarda, when Rav Hoshaya Minarda came and he transmitted a piece of Torah, also the icy masnisim biyode. He came and he had a brice in his hand, and what did it say in the brice? It said zaysim vanovim shiriska me'arv Shabbos v'yotzu me'atzma masurim Rav Lozor Rav Shimon matirim. If you have olives and grapes and he crushed them on Erev Shabbos, and on Shabbos itself, the mashkim, the oil and the wine came out, is asurim. According to Tanakhama, you're not allowed to benefit from these this oil or grapes or wine, because we're afraid that maybe he'll come to do the schita with his own hands on Shabbos. That's the Tanakhama. Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon matirim. They allow you to enjoy on Shabbos the mashkim, because you set up this process on Erev Shabbos. So Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua and this brisa clearly holds that if you started the process of Risuk of crushing the olives and the grapes on Erev Shabbos, and the mashke now will come out Memela on Shabbos, Meilov, then we're not choshesh that maybe you'll come to do the Shechita B'Yadayim on Shabbos. And therefore, we understand that our Mishnah of Beit Shammai is standing on the shoulders of and reflecting the Shechita of Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua. Now the Gemara wants to know the flip side. Why is it that Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina insists that our Mishnah reflects the Shita of Rabbi Shmuel? Why wasn't he in agreement that our Mishnah could reflect the Shita of Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua? And he says the following, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Braisa lo Shmile. He never heard that Braisa, and he didn't know that there was some sort of a distinction between... That Rabbi Elazar went as far as to be matir zeisim vanom. He thought that Rabbi Elazar would only be matir chalos dvash, because in case of chalos dvash, mikara ochel v'hashta ochel, and he didn't know that there was a brisa that recorded Rabbi Elazar saying that even in the case of zeisim vanovim, this is permissible. Now the Gemara asks the fine question: Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas, my time alone with Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina. Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina had a sheet of Rabbi Shmuel. He was matir to put the korah on Erev Shabbos, to put these beams over the grapes and the olives on Erev Shabbos. And in fact, Rabbi Shmuel spoke about a case of, if you remember, Shum and Boser and Melilos, which were crushed on Erev Shabbos, and that's fine. So why did Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas feel inhibited about interpreting that the Mishnah of Beit Shammai in the same way Rabbi Yossi did, as reflecting the sheet of Rabbi Shmuel? Amalacha, Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas would tell you, Lav Itmar Allah, we have a halacha that we got from the Beis Medrash regarding the machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. Omar Rava bar Chanina, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, bimechusarim dicha. Dicha is the process of crushing. And in a situation where the shum, the bosa, the melilos have not yet been crushed, even though you began the crushing process, that's called ma'at, right? So you began the process, but they really haven't been crushed yet. Kuliyamalo pligi, everybody agrees, even Rabbi Shmuel would be moda, that's also, you're not allowed to put the korah, this heavy beam, on Erev Shabbos, over the olives, and the Gemara Malach will take place on Shabbos. Why? Because in this case, putting the beams, the crushing beams on top of the olives, would be the Ikar Malach of Schita, because he in this case, it was Mechusar Dicha. He hadn't really done a profound act of crushing. Ki pligi b'mechusrem shchika. In other words, the Machlokas here between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel, is going to be a case where he started the process of Dicha, but he didn't get to the point of Shchika. Shchika is already a more advanced stage, where after Dicha, they need Shchika. Shchika is kind of like mashing. In other words, you really go beyond the crushing into a mashing situation. And here, we have a Machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, where he did the Dicha, but he hasn't yet done the Shchita. Haninami, these olives and grapes that the Mishnah is talking about is Memechusa Dicha Damu. Do we consider it as if there was no Dicha because he hadn't done Shchita? And Lamaisa, Rabbi Shmuel says, even though he hasn't done that more advanced process, but since he started on Erev Shabbos with a full-fledged Dicha, if it was Mechusa Dicha, everybody agrees, you're not allowed to start the process of putting the heavy beams on Erev Shabbos. But if it already had Dicha, it just hasn't yet had Shchika, then Rabbi Shmuel says it's okay, it's Mutter, and Rabbi Kiva says it's Asur. So therefore, we don't know really about the Shita of Beit Shammai now. Here's the punchline of this Gemara. Beit Shammai were matir to put the korah on the grapes and olives on Erev Shabbos, and we don't know that Rabbi Shmuel would necessarily agree, because Rabbi Shmuel himself, according to Rava, would not be lenient in a case of Mechusa Dicha. And we don't know exactly what Beit Shammai is talking about when he allows putting these beams and heavy piece of wood on the Zeisim HaNovim on Erev Shabbos, we don't know exactly where that fits in with Rabbi Shmuel, because Rabbi Shmuel himself says that it's not always automatically mutar. Hora Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, ki Rabbi Shmuel. In other words, La'alach L'maisa, the Gemara records that Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, accepted the sheet of Rabbi Shmuel, and you're allowed to put these beams on Erev Shabbos, on Bosar, Melilos, and Shum, assuming that he had started the process of Dicha on Erev Shabbos. Shemen Shel Badodim. Badodim are people who work in the field of the Beis Habad, meaning of creating oil and removing the oil out of the olives. And what would happen be that in this place called the Beis Habad, where they crushed the olives, there was some oil that was sort of left around, and the Balei Beis Habad would sort of pay the workers from this extra shemen. It was sort of like a tip kind of thing. Now the question is a mukta question, as we'll soon see. And machzolos shel bedodim, there were also these mats that the owners of the Beis Habad would use them sometimes as a covering to protect the zeisim. And the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel now is about the din of mukta. Rav osur Shmuel shari. Rav accepted the principle of mukta, which means that this, let's say in the case of machzolos, these machzolos were designated for use in the Beis Habad, and therefore, if you want to use them for other purposes, then it's mukta, because you set it aside for specific use in the Beis Habad. And Shmuel rejects the principle of mukta. Now the Gemara is going to quote another few cases where Rav and Shmuel argue where there is mukta or there's not mukta. Hani karche dezuze. For example, there were mats that were used to cover the merchandise on the boats, the schora on the sfina. And Rav says you're not allowed to use it on Shabbos for some sort of other malacha. It was designated for the malacha of the schora, for the sale. And Shmuel says no, if you want to use it for something else, you're allowed to do so. There's no isur mukta. And again, now the Gemara is going to quote another list of cases where Rav and Shmuel argue about mukta. Om Rav Nachman eiz lechalba. He designates a goat for its milk, and he's not going to shecht it. Now we're talking about yontiv. V'rachel legizasa, and he designates this sheep in order to shear off the wool from its back. V'tarnagolus lebeitzasa. So there's a hen for laying eggs. V'tori deridya, he has an ox that he uses for threshing the land. And tami deiska, he has packaged his dates for the market, so he intends to sell it. And now on Shabbos, the case of Tami Diska would apply even on Shabbos. He wants to eat the dates, but the other cases are Yontif, where he wants to shecht, he wants to slaughter the A's, or the Rochel, or the Tarnagolos, and decides he wants to eat it as meat. Is Rav Osa. Rav says that it's Mukta, and you're not allowed to shecht it on Yontif. Why? Because when we started Yontif, they were designated specifically for their malacha, and he had no intention of slaughtering the meat. He changed his mind on Yontif, he saw he didn't have any meat, and he wanted to shech them, and Rav says he's not allowed to do this. In the case of Tamarim, that he is already designated for sale, he's going to ship it out to the market, he's already packaged it, so Rav says even though he ran out of dates on his table, he's not allowed to go into this the schera, you know, these merchandise, and take it out of the bundles. Ushmuel, Omar Mutin Shmuel allows it. V'kam miflugi, and they're arguing bepluta de Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbi Shimon. This is the old machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon about mukta. Rabbi Yehuda is machmir. Rabbi Yehuda holds that anything that you want to use on Shabbos or Yontif has to be prepared before Shabbos or Yontif. Without that hachana, if the pasuk says v'ichinu es asher yaviu, it's mukta, and that's Rav Shita here. But Rabbi Shimon is Mekel. He doesn't have Mukta. He holds that it, as long as going into Shabbos or Yontif, it is royal Lishbo. It's something that has a function. Then there's no such. It's Muchan. It's Muchan Mielov. It's automatically considered Muchan because it's royal Tashmish. Even Rabbi Shimon would agree that if you had something that going into Shabbos or going to Yontif was not royal Tashmish, it doesn't have any use. Then, like Eitzim Vavonim and stuff like that, that would be Mukta. That's Mamish Mukta. But in a case of something that's royalish Tamish Bo on Erev Shabbos, just that he designated for some sort of a malacha, and now he wants to change his mind, then Rav Shimon allows it, and Shmuel accepts the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. It's the only thing we didn't discuss here before we end the. This particular part of the sugya is the case of Shemen Shel Badadim. Okay, so we said that there's something called the Beis Abad where they crush the olives and get out the oil, extract the oil, and the Bali Beis Abad, who are called the Badadim, these are the owners of the Beis Abad, is Shemen Amishtayer Bepinos Beis Abad Taksakoros Venitan Labali V'nitan lebali beis habad bischarom. Ah, so if I understand correctly, what happens is that the owner of the beis habad rents out the beis habad, and some of these oils are left under the beams, and I guess in little containers of some sort, and it's usually known that the balabatim, the bal beis habad would collect these bundles of oil. And since it's being used for payment, therefore it's not generally used for personal use, and therefore according to Rav, it's Muktza. Hahu Talmida di Ore, there was a certain Talmud who paskind in the city of Charasa di Argiz. Right? Charasa was the name of the city, Argiz was the person who built the city. Kirabi Shimon, he paskind like Rav Shimon in Muktza, which means he was Mekil, and Shamte Rav Hamnuna. Rav Hamnuna put him into Nidui. Now, exactly what Nidui is, that would require studying Masechet Nedarim. It's not exactly a cherem, it's not excommunication, but there's something called Nidui. So the Gemara asks, well, Rav Shimon Svirale. We paskin like Rav Shimon against Rav Yehuda. There's no mukta. So why? Well, why is this Talmud meant to be cast? Why are you castigating him? What did he do wrong? And the Gemara answers, Biasri de Rav. The story took place in the city of Rav. And Rav, as we know, paskin la locha like Rabbi Yehuda, is lo'i boil a mevet hoch. He had no permission to paskin against Rav like Rabbi Shimon. It's a zilzul, and it undermines the covenant of Rav, who's the Morad Asra. He's the head honcho and the final posek in the city, and therefore this Talmud has to be put in his place for paskining against Rav. Hani Trei Talmidi, the story of two Talmidim, they had a machlokes as to whether it's permissible to take mazon and mashkin from a place where the fire started burning. That's a whole sugya later on in Shabbos. They allowed you to take food out of your house in a case where a fire breaks into a karmelis. And there are two different shittas about how much they allowed you to take out. Chad, one of the Talmidim, was Mekil, and he said, Matzil b'chad mono. You could take as much food and drink as you want, as long as it's in one receptacle. So you only have to make one trip, so to speak, to take it out from your house into the courtyard. But if you take it out in different kelim, that you're not allowed to do. That's called already a tirchi yaseir. That's too much work, and it's prohibited on Shabbos v'chad. And another Talmud, Matzil b'arba v'chamisha money, he allowed you to take in four or five different utensils, but he was makpid that he should be machnis osam kevotol kli gadol, that he should take these four or five smaller utensils and place them all into one gigantic utensil, and then we allow you to take it out of the bayis out into the chotzer. This is an old machlokes, beplukta de Rava bar Zavdov Rav Huna. That's machlokes on Daf Kuf Chaf in Masechet Shabbos about to what extent they were mekil and they allowed you to take out the kelim into the chotzer in a case of a